League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey, welcome to Stone Cold Strohs. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan 975 and read their work at sportsmap.com. Guys, let's get right into it. We have to start with pitching, obviously. Got an update on Jose Urquidy that he will start the season on the IL due to what's being called a forearm strain. Since the pain was initially described as a sore elbow, everyone is curious about that UCL. Now, Espada was asked about that and said that the only information he has is the forearm strain. Hey, there's the Astros we know, right? Josh and I have been bullish on Urquidy as we've been talking through this preseason because he's a guy that has historically been solid for this team as a middle to back half of the rotation contributor. He struggled the second half of last season to what's now being attributed as pitch tipping. The thought was that was fixed. He's looked great so far. Charlie, the Astros probably weren't going to go win their third World Series on the back of Jose Urquidy, but with JV down to start the season, Fromber hasn't looked his sharpest, big question marks around Javier and Brown. The Astros needed Urquidy to at least be solid. This news isn't huge, I guess, but it's not insignificant. What's your concern level here, and how does this change the outlook for the rotation at large?
Well, specifically to Urquidy, the concern level is very high. Because you kind of threw down the breadcrumbs, so I'll follow the trail. Elbow bothering him, forearm strain. How often has that led to Tommy John surgery? Looks like Garrett Cole with the Yankees is going to avoid that, but hey, a grain of salt of consolation. The Yankees losing Garrett Cole for 2 to 3 months is bigger than the Astros if they were to lose Jose Urquidy for the entire year. But it was in this very stone-cold Stroh's font of insight space last week that we talked about often injury-ravaged and poor performance 2023 for Jose Urquidy, that it was so far so very good this spring with 9 scoreless innings, and now that's all up in smoke. For the Astros rotation, obviously their depth has been destroyed going into the season with no Verlander, now no Urquidy. Of course, we know that Garcia and McCullers, forget them until July at the earliest. It seems rather ominous. The Astros will start the season next week with 0 pitchers in their rotation who are good major league pitchers at the end of 2023, right? Fromber faded badly. Javier faded badly. Hunter Brown was lousy from May 1st on. And then when you look at the back end, Urquidy now out of the picture, you know, there's no one that you're saying, okay, just pick up where you left off in 2023. And that bodes well. And the stretch of, 20 games in 21 days early and then another one 21 in 22 days, they're not going to rush Justin Verlander back. We're not going to see him until the back half of April at the earliest. So they're going to need more innings out of their bullpen, which was a question going into spring training. Who's the bridge from the starters to the Fab 3? We'll need a better name for those guys than that. So take heart and that the lineup should be locked and loaded and one of the best in the game, because the Astros may have to win more slugfests than we're accustomed to having them to need to win at the rate that we've been accustomed to and spoiled by around here for a pretty good number of years.
It's concerning because you look at what else they have. You spoke about all those games they have early on. There was talk they might use the 6-man rotation. I guess that would be Belak you got to put in there with Ronel Blanco if you want to go that route. I know it's spring.
And JP France to those who faded late last season.
Yeah, and JP France, it looks like he's kind of locked in there. You desperately need JP France with what we're seeing right now. Hopefully he is back on schedule and ready to go. But you look at Belak, I know it's only the spring, but ERA over 7. Fromber's is even worse, so whatever you want to make of that. But point being, it's not like it's encouraging what your other options are right here. So I'm concerned, but I also look at Urquidy and he's just, he's never been a true horse for you. 2022 is the most starts he ever made with 28 that season, which is really good. Outside of that, he had 20 starts in 2021, and that's the most he'd ever had. He only had 10 starts last year, and that's my other concern with Urquidy with this elbow issue. He missed a lot of time because of a shoulder last year. So you're starting to see all the parts in his pitching arm he's having issues with. Hopefully the wrist or something like that isn't next. But I'm concerned, and he was looking so good. It was starting to feel like a good feel-good story. Oh, he was tipping pitches, but now he's figured that out. He's healthy. Astros need him, and it's just – it's not looking good early on. I just, you don't want them to get off to too slow of a start. I know it's a 162 game schedule, plenty of time to make that up, but you have no guarantee that you're going to get that infusion of pitching around the All-Star break. This is all just hope and a prayer right now with McCullers and Luis Garcia. So count me as concerned. I thought Urquidy was going to be a big part of getting the season off on a good start, and it could still be. Maybe he's only out for, I don't know, a month, 3-4 weeks if we're super, super lucky. But I think it's going to be a while. They're going to have to rely on that depth. And it's just, it's not there where you would hope it would be right now.
So the answers aren't encouraging internally. So maybe there's an external answer. And that brings us to the Blake Snell rumors that arose last week. Astros reportedly interested in Blake Snell, but the reported asking price of 2 years, $66 million has supposedly cooled them on Blake Snell. And so now it looks like the Giants are the more likely of the landing spots. Again, however much you put into these reports, I was surprised to see the Astros, if we're being honest, I was surprised to see the Astros being in the mix on Snell just because the high tag asking price that he's going to command. I didn't really think that was realistic, but we know a lot of times the Astros name gets used, at least it appears as if it gets used to drive up the price to keep these pitchers and hitters away from the Astros. Charlie, do you think this was an instance of the Astros' name being used as leverage? And where do you stand on a short but a $33 million AAV price tag for Snell?
Yeah, 2 years, $66 million. Coincidentally, the extension Justin Verlander once signed, and that turned out to be a fiscal disaster for those 2 years. And then they got him back for 25, and 2022 was historic. But if Jim Crane is spooked by 2 years, $66 million, it's with good reason. Number of layers to this worth hitting. That Scott Boras would leak the Astros' interest, of course, that's a distinct possibility. Scott Boras is a great agent, most prolific agent, probably the most successful agent of all time, but he sets off stink bombs from time to time. And at this point, he screwed his client, Blake Snell. Now, he may make a great recovery, but the Yankees, a couple of months ago, by credible accounts, offered him 6 years, $150 million, only $25 million per season. How insulting. Well, look, Blake Snell has thrown 130 innings in a season once in the last 5 years. It happened to come last season. Great timing as he hit the market. But around Major League Baseball, people are thinking, well, Blake Snell's no workhorse. How many outs did he record after the sixth inning last season? Damn close to zero. Now, he was untouchable, an ERA of below 130 from mid-May on, but he never has been or will be a 200-inning guy. Count on him to get you through seven innings. Three of the last five seasons, his ERA has also been over 350, and 350's just fine, but he has not been a year-in, year-out ace. He's had his two Cy Young Award-winning seasons, and beyond that, eh. So that the original ask supposedly was 9 years, 270. Okay, I guess you could ask for anything, like in a lawsuit, you settle for half what you originally asked for, you're doing well. But from the Astros' perspective, you know, there's just that he's not a $33 million pitcher. I mean, if he's healthy all year, that's $1 million per start. He averaged 5 2/3 innings per starts in winning the Cy Young Award. You know, with that vesting option, $33 million for year two, if he stinks, or if he gets hurt, that Snell opts into that. I would go back to Boras. I think the $33 million is too rich for the Astros' blood. If you could get it down to maybe $25 million, I would consider that fair on a one-year deal. But guess what? That second-year option, it's worth $15 million unless Snell throws at least 150 innings with an ERA of 350 or lower. And if Boris stomps his feet and says that's utterly unacceptable, well, then okay, good luck getting what you can on the market, which obviously, other than what the Yankees offered 2 months ago, did not materialize, has not materialized. And so they're looking to take a shorter deal with all the opt-out control, as he did in re-upping Cody Bellinger, as he had to settle for Matt Chapman in going to the Giants, but especially with a pitcher. Go look at the top 10 guys in earned run average among qualifiers in Major League Baseball last season. Almost all of them are hurt right now. Verlander among them. So, you know, it would also push the Astros well beyond the second tax threshold, where the penalty becomes more punitive both financially and drops your first-round draft choice 10 slots. So, you know, desperation. Does Jim Crane get to a point where he grits his teeth and says, the Seattle Mariners rotation obviously right now is a lot better than the Astros? Yeah, well, the Astros lineup is still a lot better than the Mariners. Where do the Rangers fall on the spectrum? The Astros are cognizant of they barely made the playoffs last year, just as they almost made it back to another World Series, but they barely made the playoffs. So the rotation is materially inferior to where it was last year. Okay, you're hoping to have Alvarez for 150 games, Altuve for 140, 150 games compared to their numbers last season. But, you know, it seems like what they've done and everything they've achieved over the last 7 years, the Astros making the playoffs, winning the division is darn near a birthright. Well, at the end of the life cycle after birth is death. And that the Astros streaks could end this year because the pitching totally craters. I mean, they have to be at least thinking, we need to guard against that a little bit.
I think the only reason we're even talking about this is that report from Chandler Rome about how Jim Crane was interested in Hader and possibly Snell. They didn't name the player specifically, but we all kind of think we know who they're talking about. If we didn't hear the rumor that Jim Crane wanted Snell, I don't think we'd give this any real discussion, but because we know he's the guy that pulls the trigger ultimately. And if he wants Snell and it's his money, he'll go get him.
But that was as a rental, not a 2 years, $66 million. Now, maybe they'd have fallen in love and renewed vows, but the dynamics then certainly different than they are right now.
Certainly. But we know he likes the player and they're reportedly kicking the tires on him. So that just something about these left-handers, Jim Crane really likes them. And I can't blame him. But the thing that worries me is that because the qualifying offer that was given to both Snell and Hader, you're already going to have to give up a pick for Hader. If you do the deal for Snell, you're going to have to give up another pick. And this is a team that they're really trying to rebuild their farm system. So giving up draft picks for guys that could just end up being a rental, that's what bothers me the most. Like, oh, you're going to agree to 2 years, but oh, it's a player option for that second year. So if you're not good, you can just stay on and make your $33 million. But if you are good, then you can opt out and then go try and make another long-term contract. It doesn't really benefit the Astros very much unless it's just for his simple performance this year, him putting you over the top. That's the only reason I think you consider doing this. It's a lot of money. And then you have to look at your other guys that you're trying to re-sign and going out and paying Blake Snell this. Fromber's not going to be too excited to see that. Bregman, Tucker, these guys are trying to get deals done and you're going to go spend this money on this. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but I'll be honest. I was checking my phone all weekend, hoping that I saw the Astros sign Blake Snell, but obviously I wanted it to be a deal that makes more sense for the Astros. If they're the only ones willing to put their cash in the middle of the table, you need to make the deal to where it's just not so punitive to the Astros, where you can do whatever you want the following season.
It would be an incredible addition, but devil as always is in the details. How crushing would it be to the Rangers, the Mariners, anyone else, if they were to hear Astros land Blake Snell? But it doesn't mean Scott Boras gets to call the shots, dictate all the terms on this. And what's the balance for the Astros between reasonable expectation and crossing your fingers really hard if Justin Verlander's back May 1st, and what level of performance and workload is he going to be equipped to deliver in 2024? Luis Garcia, when he makes it back, and he will in the second half from a straightforward Tommy John, but coming off that, is he going to pick up where he left off and be a good, solid mid-rotation starter joining you the second half of the season? I mean, any expectation that Lance McCullers is going to come back and be excellent, I mean, come on. They have to look at that as found money. If and when McCullers gets back July, August, September, and then before his next injury. So it's an interesting spot, but let me throw in the usual proviso. Anytime we've talked about, hey, the Astros have room to do this, do that. If they don't pony up for Snell, you can't say, well, Jim Crane's being a tightwad. They're third in payroll going into this season. And if we want to add the Dodgers in because of the way they not tricked up the Ohtani contract, but exploited the system on the Ohtani contract, Mets, Yankees, Dodgers, the only team spending more than the Astros as is, so that they should, oh, just spend another $30 million, $33 million, and give Snell the option for another $33 million next year. That's not fair.
And speaking of the devil, as you were talking, Charlie, you do have to wonder if Blake Snell is getting Dallas Keuchel'd by Scott Boras here. The only thing I'd say about Crane's frugality is we have seen Crane budge this offseason on crossing into that first threshold and the amounts and years that he's given a free agent, and that was in pitching. So I do wonder if he would budge if it is on the pitching side, and to Josh's point, especially a left-hander. Now, we got news over the weekend that it is going to be Nestor Cortes versus Framber Valdez that are going to start for opening day. Framber is knocking on the door of an 8 ERA now in spring training. Charlie, you reminded us early on that these numbers don't mean anything, but I think a short window performance combined with the regression that we saw the second half of last season, what's your concern level going into specifically, not necessarily this matchup, but this is a good place to start?
I think you summed it up well, that he gets cuffed around and at adding such a small number of innings, the stats can be distorted, good or bad, in a hurry. But as the chaser to what was a very bitter swallow in terms of Framber's performance the second half of last season, the antenna should be up. But, you know, he's 30, not 35 that you're thinking, oh, is his stuff just disappeared on him? But if he doesn't get a hold of the command issues, and we've talked before about getting the sink back in the sinker, I mean, if he's not a very good pitcher, he's the only guy in their rotation that you'd say you feel like he should give you 30 starts, 180 innings, even if they're not the overall quality of most of 2022 and the first half of 2023. If you're not getting that with all their other question marks in the rotation, at least certainly until Verlander gets back, that's some pretty heavy ballast to carry in the wrong direction.
We know it's spring training, yada, yada, yada. Don't look at it too hard. But what does jump off the page is just Framber's ERA near 8, where Ronel Blanco's ERA is 0, and he's pitched more innings. And you look at Hunter Brown, ERA in the 2s. Christian Javier has been really good as well. J.P. France, only a few innings, but only 2 1/3 for J.P. France, but ERA a tick over 3. It's just that Framber's like this outlier, almost ERA over 8. And then all these other guys that you're hoping are going to bounce back, their numbers look good. So I think that's like, what do you believe here? I guess we just throw it all out. It doesn't really matter. But it's just concerning that he's getting lit up so consistently, and that it does go along with the pattern of last season. If we would have been looking at this matchup like classic Framber versus Cortes, I know Cortes has had some good moments, but typically you would look at this like, oh, great, big advantage here, Astros with Framber on the mound at home. They should win this game, no problem. I don't really feel that way right now. I'm going to have to see it to believe it with Framber. And this is going to be a lot of, it's Yankees, it's opening day. This is a brand new catcher to throw to. That's something else we probably need to mention. Now Fromber's kind of going back on calling his own pitches. He's going to not use the pitch comp for that. He's going to have Diaz do it, it looks like. I think that's the right move. I think Framber has enough on his plate as it is, instead of having to call his own game. So I think that should help him. But you'd have to have your head buried in the sand if you're not a little bit worried about what you're going to get from Framber this year, in particular because so much is riding on him with all the other injuries to the staff and with some concerns about Hunter Brown and Christian Javier. Like, you got to have one guy you can count on, and Fromber's got to be that guy.
If he was pitching for a spot in the rotation, he'd be doing a decent job of blowing it. But he's the opening day starter. And, you know, as Framber unraveled, it was with Martin Maldonado catching him every damn start. So I don't want to hear one story if he scuffles out of the gate or just fades to oblivion as a pitcher that, oh, the inability to suckle at the teeth of Maldonado ruined Framber. BS. But to take it to where you opened the topic, Brandon, Nestor Cortes is the Yankees' opening day starter. Yeah, an all-star, a great story in 2022 as a late bloomer. 2023, he wasn't very good, and talk about injury wrecked, right? He was out for like 6 weeks, came back, made a start against the Astros in June or whatever it was, and the season was over. And this is the Yankees' opening day starter, and they're probably going with Carlos Rodon in game two before going with Marcus Stroman, who was offered to the spot to replace Cole opening day. But now my regimen has me scheduled to be the number three starter. So, you know, these problems are relative, and the Astros have been so high on the hog for so long that this is the shakiest rotation going into a season that they've had since they weren't a good team. But Cortez, Rodon, 1-2, and then Stroman, 3, who fell apart, was injured the second half of last season. And then the Yankees have Clark Schmidt and some nobody, whoever emerges as their number five starter. So, you know, Astros problems relative to a bunch of teams, not so bad. The Orioles have lost their best starter from last year, Kyle Bradish, for a good stretch going into this season because of forearm problems. But measuring the Astros just by the Astros, yeah, the rotation right now is, it's not in tatters, but it's definitely frayed.
Whose is better right now as who we think is going to pitch for the first week of the season or so, Yankees rotation or Astros?
I'll take the Astros in that Cortez barely pitched last season. Rodon didn't pitch much, but at an ERA over 6, and I'm going to guess that it was more hurt than he cratered that he can't handle New York. But then Stroman coming off injury. Clark Schmidt just wasn't very good. The Yankees traded most of their organizational depth in pitching to get Juan Soto. So, you know, maybe it's the lesser of two evils, Josh, but I take the Astros rotation the first turn through over the Yankees rotation.
It's also tough to look at it within a scope because Rodon's very capable of being very good. We've seen it from him. Same thing with Cortez. We've seen Cortez be downright nasty. So it just depends on how everybody's feeling in that 1 week time span. And if there weren't enough questions about depth, just a reminder that the Astros will be without Brian Abreu for the first two games due to suspension and will not be able to replace him on the roster. So keep that in mind as we're looking at this opening series with the Yankees. So just call me Mr. Brightside. All right. So let's shift over from the pitching performances in the spring training to the hitting performances in spring training. And I got to say, there's some unlikely suspects that are giving me some encouragement. And it starts really with Jake Meyers. And I don't know whether it's because he's feeling optimism or feeling energized from that confidence that he's been given and being named the starting center fielder for this team. But Jake Meyers right now hitting .320 with a .469 on base percentage and 1.149 OPS. And that's just behind. Mauricio Dubon has a 1.295 OPS right now. Dubon versus Meyers. I think it's an interesting conversation because both of those guys are having a really nice Grapefruit League. One of those guys had a really good 2023 and contributed in the postseason. But the other guy is the one that's named to the starting center field position. Mauricio Dubon, if he continues to hit at this level, do you think he's going to put pressure on Joe Espada to use him more in the center field position or maybe in other places, especially considering that Jeremy Pena is still hitting sub 250 right now in the Grapefruit League?
In tennis terms, I think it's on Jake Meyers's racket. I largely dismiss the spring stats because you can hit 900 in the spring, and if you go 1-for-12 to start the regular season, there's no reason to remember the guy who hit 900 in the spring. But good for Jake Meyers to, I mean, what percentage of Astros fans would have happily traded him for a bag of donuts in the offseason? And that can mean cake or yeast or the ones that you put on the bat in the on-deck circle. You know, that he's been gifted the primary center field job. Where are the merits on this? And at least he's had the spring training to validate that decision. But when the lights go on and the results truly matter, well, what's he going to do? And how long will his runway be? But Jake Meyers is strictly an outfielder. So Joe Espada, from when he got the job and was first asked about it, stated, and I agree, that Mauricio Dubon is best suited for that super utility role. Dubon was outstanding for the Astros last season, but his OPS was .720. So, and it's not like he was a really good offensive player. He was really good relative to Dubon's track record in the major leagues and in manning the position very credibly and, frankly, a better defensive second baseman than Jose Altuve while Altuve was out to start the season. And then when Meyers fell on his face, Dubon gave you a good center field play. Worth noting, Dubon's best 2 months at the plate were August and September. So if he found a new level, and that would carry over into the regular season, Meyers better perform. But I'm very curious in the overall scope on, is there a master plan for Dubon's playing time? obviously does not include anything approaching regular play in center field, because the days that Jordan plays left, I don't want Dubon in there at Chaz McCormick's expense, unless their 2024 performances shift. I'm thinking Dubon should start at least once per week at second base for Altuve, where Altuve gets the occasional day off and the occasional DH game. Yeah, season's basically 6 months, so let's call it 26 weeks. So I'm thinking Dubon should start once per week, which means Altuve is still playing 135 games at second base. That's a lot for a guy who turns 34 years old in May and only played 90 games last season. Shortstop. I'm not saying it should be an open competition, but Dubon's OPS was better than Jeremy Pena's last year. I don't think the defensive fall off is massive from Pena to Dubon. And again, I don't want to make too much of spring training stuff, and I think it makes sense to get Pena extra at bats, but that they're taking him to backfields to get extra swing time speaks to the fact that, well, it hasn't been this seamless transition, and whoa, he looks like Barry Larkin or Robert Yount with his newfound swing, and just the regular spring training workload is fine for Jeremy Pena. I think Dubon should be getting a start at shortstop at least once every couple of weeks. Which means that Pena would be getting 145 starts at shortstop, but Dubon a little playing time there. Just the spot start in center field. And then the unfortunate reality, someone's probably going to get hurt at some point during the season. Last year, it was Altuve that gave Dubon a lot of playing time. Well, if it's not Altuve again, and knock on wood that it's not, it could be another position that where you plug another guy in, it opens a spot for Dubon because of his versatility. So I think unless Myers absolutely flames, Dubon's just not going to get many starts at all at center field.
It's nice to have Dubon, right? I mean, he gives you so much, you know, flexibility. Just this spring, he's played center field, second base, shortstop, third base. They've even talked about maybe, you know, getting Bregman a few more days of rest. I think he played like near 160 games, something crazy last year.
161.
So there you go. And then also, you know, Abreu, he was a little overused, giving him some time to get some breaks over there. So Dubon's just a really just a wonderful option to have here. And I'm with Charlie. You got to get him regular playing time, you know, not every day, but get him in the lineup once or twice a week so his skills don't diminish. And then the Jake Myers thing, you know, we look back at, you know, remember Justin Dearden was the darling of spring training last year. And then that didn't really amount to much. We see that stuff happen every spring. So you can't get too high or low based off this stuff. But with Jake Myers, I will say this. You know, I have some friends that go to spring training every year in Florida. And they said last year, Jake Myers was not about really being super friendly with the fans and interacting very much. But that was very different this year, that he was smiling and, you know, signing autographs and just seemed to be in a better headspace altogether this year. So that kind of makes some sense if he did go see this psychologist and now he's performing better and it seems like he's kind of more involved and outward facing with the fans and interacting, having a better time. And let's be real, you're always in a better mood when you're performing better. I mean, Matt, you work so hard at it, and then when it doesn't go right, it can be really deflating. So when it is going well, you are going to be in a better mood, but that stuff kind of snowballs, and you know, your confidence comes from repeated success. So hopefully Jake can keep doing that. I don't think he can keep doing what he is doing here, but I think if he could just be a little above average center fielder for you, that would be huge, because he does have a lot of different tools he can bring to the ballpark. He doesn't cost you much money, and it's a long season. Some guys are going to get banged up, and you're going to need everybody you have on your roster. So I'm hoping they can swing the bat. The Jeremy Pena thing's got me worried a little bit, but I'm not too worried because they have Dubon. If for some reason Pena just can't get it together, you have a really good option to go to, and it's not like you just throw out Pena. You keep working with him, and hopefully he finds it again.
Their lineup is going to be fine, right? If you get 30 more games out of Jordan, you get 50 more games out of Altuve than you did last year. Tucker and Bregman obviously are going to be everyday players. You know, Pena can't drop off much from where he was last year. And if he does, well, then Dubon can take the job. Abreu overall in 2023 was not a good player. He can't drop off much from where he was last year. So unless you have an unexpected decline from a key player, their offense is going to be stout. And as we've talked about before, I won't even mention his name again here, but at the very, very bottom of the order, you're going to be better almost no matter who is there batting ninth, even if it's Jake Myers and people are still saying, hey, why is Jake Myers playing so much? You know, it's going to cycle back to the biggest question marks about the Astros are the pitching, their offense. You know, netted out very well last year was two feast or famine and erraticy. But bottom line, you're fifth in the league in scoring runs. Your offense is pretty good. And the Astros lineup has the potential to be really, really good. We haven't even mentioned Yadier Diaz.
The only problem in looking at Dubon for Pena as a solution there is neither guy walks. And really, you don't really gain much there. Dubon had a 309 on-base percentage last season, and that was in one of his better seasons. So he's just not a guy that's going to get on unless he's hitting his way on. So it is a slight improvement, but I don't know that you're improving on defense. Jeremy Pena is a very good defender. It's imperative that Pena figures it out, and it is just weird that we're I know we can't look too much into spring training games because it's such a small sample size, but him in organized play going back to last July, he hasn't even accidentally ran into a home run. It is head scratching as I literally do that. And Charlie, you mentioned donuts. I don't know where you guys come out at, but I'm firmly on Team Shipley. And they're not a sponsor, but I really think that they should be.
I'm definitely on Team Cake Donut over yeast. So your staple glazed is a pass for me.
Oh, wow. All right. Josh, you get the last
different
word.
Different strokes, different folks.
Donut preference. Josh, go.
I'm usually, I like the glazed with the chocolate icing on top. That's one of my faves.
All right. Well, there you go. That's going to be it for another episode of Stone Cold Strohs. It's in the bush. Before we go, I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the passing of our friend and former colleague, Fred Fowler. Fred was a sports radio icon in the city. We can't really tell the story of sports radio in Houston without mentioning a few people. Charlie's one of those guys, and Fred's another. He and AJ Hoffman owned Afternoons in the City for a large chunk of time. I was lucky enough to work with him, as was Josh, for several years. And what I can say is he really did his best to make sure that those around him were elevated. So Fred, just want to say, we will miss you. Sports to you, Falcon. And until next time, guys, go Strohs.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility, to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.